Oh, but maybe there is something in the blood and then the inheritance of risk-taking in Norway, that we have a lot of very good brokerage houses, that like Arctic.
That must be it.
Politicians don't understand what's going to save Norway after the oil. Every new fantastic idea that is being created is being sold to some other country. This is worse than giving away the Gibson.
He is a self-made tech billionaire. He is the chairman of Crayon, Link Mobility, Sikri, TechStep, a bunch of companies listed on the very active Oslo Stock Exchange. He has also been an activist investor in Infont. He also owns my favorite darts bar, Ocha. He owns e-commerce platform Let Boutique, Pet XL, the pet shop. In fact, he owns about 10 unlisted companies. He is Jens Rugseth. Welcome to the Arctic Podcast Studio.
Thank you very much.
We are recording this on Thursday, the 10th of June. I was thinking, we have a lot to talk about, given all your exciting companies. We should start maybe with some quick questions.
Sure.
Question number one, Mr. Rugseth, who do you think is the best CEO in Norway?
Her name is Grete Viksaas, the founder of Basefarm. If she had been a man, she would be the CEO of Telenor today.
Oh, really? Where Basefarm is not listed?
Basefarm is not listed. It was sold in 2018 to Orange, and Basefarm today is the platform for Orange hosting services globally. And this is a company started in Norway in 2000 by Grete, and I was lucky enough to come in from the start and was part of that company for many years and was also a shareholder. Fantastic company, the best hoster in the Nordics, and with a CEO that was both tough but also kind, understood the technology and standard the business better than anyone. I'd never seen any other CEO being able to go up to the whiteboard and just make the offer on the blackboard or whiteboard within an hour after meeting the customer and said, this is what we're going to do. This is how it's going to, what they're going to cost. And yeah, sign here, more or less. She had it both the strategic, the business and the management style.
And do you think she can be the CEO of another company than Telenor?
Today, I think she's happy of being a kind of freelance. She's on several boards and she has active investments in smaller companies, more like a tech angel. And lucky are those who has her on her board.
Fascinating. Second question, who is the best owner or investor in Norway, in your opinion?
Beside me,
you mean? Yeah, I was hoping that you would say you.
No, I think it's one guy who's really, I think is really interesting is Jan Heidmann Andersen. Back in the day, he was considered like a bjellesau and, you know, a fast investor in and out. But if you see what he's done over the last 10, 15 years, he's what I would call an intrusive investor. He has clear opinions, but he lets the management do the job and is extremely supportive of what they do. So it might be a choice that is hard for someone to understand, but I think the main reason you don't understand it is because he's not a media guy.
He's not yet been on the Arctic Podcast, that's for sure.
So you should invite him.
And second follow-up question, maybe, how many shares do you own in Kahoot?
I don't own any shares in Kahoot, and the reason is because I'm a coward investor. When I invest, it needs to be brick and mortar. It needs to be invoices. It needs to be revenue. It needs to be products that has proven itself over many years. And I need to see a connection between the revenue, the profit, and the share price. Whenever there is what I would call a lottery, where, you know, somebody like Microsoft might come and say, you know, this is worth $100 million for us or $100 billion for us. Well, that's great. I mean, I envy those who have that gut feeling to invest in those kind of companies, but I'm just too much of a coward.
And who is the best company or the best tech company in the world? Which company do you admire the most?
I make my money from Microsoft and a lot of others, but I typically say that Microsoft makes me my money, but Apple makes me happy.
Ah, uh-huh. Very good answer.
So I've been a Mac user since 1985. So I think I've used most of the models they've had, both from, you know, iPhones, iPads, Macs, what have you.
Next question. What is the best part of the pandemic, this whole COVID crisis? Obviously, we changed, we're now social distancing, even in the Arctic podcast studio, there's 2.5 meters between us. What is the best part of the pandemic?
The best part of the pandemic was my wife and I had 36 Friday dinners in a row without being away from each other.
Still married?
Still married, but we work in the same house, but one on the third floor and one in the basement.
That's good with a bit of distancing.
We have a demilitarized zone in the middle.
That sounds fantastic. Okay, and last question on this section. What is your favorite animal? If you had to be an animal, which one would you choose?
I think I would be a cat. We've always had dogs, but the difference between a cat and a dog is that the dog loves you and the cat doesn't care about you. It only cares about itself. So the cat is independent, strong, doesn't need to be in the house by, you know, early evening.
He does a little bit like he or she wants to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Maybe a little bit like you. So yeah. We're moving swiftly over now to the company section, because you have so many companies and we love the fact that many of them are listed. So we can talk about them with the investors and clients, and everyone listening to the Arctic podcast can make up their own minds about these listed shares. You have said before that the best investment you ever made was in Link Mobility.
Yeah, so I invested 10,000 kroner back in 2000. I can't take the percentages right away, but it's been 1,000 times or more.
It currently has a market cap around 9 billion, IPO at around 13, 14 billion.
Yeah.
And you were an investor all through the period where it was listed, and then it was taken private and it came back.
Yeah.
I think you said that this is how you made your first billion and a half.
That's true. it's been incredible, but I think I've been very patient. I'm the only one that has been in the company for the whole period. And the fact is that 7 years into the company's life, we had a board meeting where we discussed, should we, you know, close the whole thing down?
Oh, really?
And if we hadn't, we borrowed 10 million NOK from DNB, and, you know, we had to sign up for that loan. So
a personal guarantee?
Personal guarantee.
Oh, wow.
So we decided that, well, it's better to continue, because if not, they're going to come after all of us to pay those 10 million. So I'm happy we decided to go on. And I mean, after 2010, it's been just an incredible ride.
But I have to ask you, because I did already indicate that the stock is down a little bit from the IPO price. The IPO was in 21st of October 2020 at 47, and it lost 33.79. You bought some shares, as you obviously filed, 250,000 shares at 42.97, i.e. some 10.7 million NOK worth on the end of March. Well, it's difficult, but why do you think the stock is falling?
Yeah, so first of all, running a company, it's not a 100-meter sprint. It's a marathon.
Clearly, like you said, with 20 years.
It's a lot of marathons. Wow. So I think the reason Link is down now is due to the strategy. I think long-term, we have the exactly right strategy. And we even saw one of our competitors yesterday, Sinch, buying a company that is much more aligned with Link, and it is aligned with Sinch. So from day one, we said, we're going to build a European and now a global company going enterprise by enterprise. We have more than 40,000 enterprise customers that rely on us in their communication with their end customers. And that's a great story, and it has worked very well for us, and it will continue to work very well for us. But during the pandemic, there was a change in the market. If you look at, travel, retail, hospitality, they have had a really hard time.
It's been going down 90%.
And we have thousands of those customers that will still be our customers post the pandemic. There is a different part of the market, which we call the aggregator market. And we decided some years ago, we don't play in the aggregator market because it's low value, low technical competence to do that market. But that market has exploded during the pandemic. So aggregated traffic, what is it? Well, it's typically two-factor authentication that Apple, Google, Microsoft, those guys need. But they don't even sign agreements with you. They say, we're going to buy for $100 million or maybe $200 million over the next 3 months. And then we'll see after that. So we said we want long-term contracts, we want high-value contracts, and so we've been hurt a little bit about that with that. But we're already seeing, as we said on the Q1 presentation, that we're on a rebound from a volume perspective. And I don't look at share prices on a daily basis because my long-term goal is value creation and not the share price from day to day.
But since you mentioned Sinch, that's been a fantastic stock. It was around 40 billion when Link was IPO, then it's actually 117 billion now.
It's an incredible company. I know the management and I know the people on the board. They've been on a roll over the last few years. And what they did in the US is just incredible. The foothold they got in the US 3-4 years ago, and the way they've been able to build on the US position is really, really, really strong. And also what has happened in the US during the pandemic is that the US finally has discovered the strength of the mobile messaging. So if you go back 2 years, I would say that the US were 5 to 8 years behind the Nordics, and especially Norway. But they caught up quite dramatically over the last year and a half. And that has, of course, played into Sinch very well. And yeah, so we're probably not going to catch up this year, but give us a couple.
But do you think you could be better together?
No, actually, I don't think so, because our position in the European market, we are the dominant player in the European market. And if we should put those two companies together, I think in some countries, the position would be so strong that we would have a problem to get approval from that, from the competition authorities. And I also think we have a better strategy to be sure. I mean, if you look at the number of customers we have compared to Sinch pre their acquisition yesterday, we have more than four times as many customers. And if you look at the value of every incident or message or event that we do compared to what Sinch are doing, the value is 3 to 4 times higher. So it's very different strategies. They've gotten incredible results with their what they've been doing. But I see it a bit as a tortoise and a hare.
Okay.
And we in this moment is the tortoise. But I think we'll cross the finish line first.
That's excellent. Now I think in terms of stock market perception. And obviously the stock market tends to be a little bit short-term oriented, as you know, and that's maybe good and bad. Well, good for some and bad for the long-term investors. But Crayon is maybe perceived as your biggest success. You obviously made more money, I think, absolute numbers in Link, but Crayon has just been a so fantastic stock market performance. IPO'd in 2017 at 15.5. Then obviously now closing at 120 NOK per share yesterday, I think. That's 90% per year or 850% in total. That's fantastic. It is much better than the Nasdaq composite, for example, which was only up 23% per year in the same period. What have you done so great with Crayon?
So just to take the differences between Crayon and Link. So Crayon is a company that has done 95, 96, 97% of everything organically.
Uh-huh.
So it comes down to the strategy, the customer acquisition model, the expansion model we've had. We actually, we cornered the strategy of Crayon after 3-4 months back in 2002. And we clearly stated that, you know, this is our strategy. I'm not going to put that on the on the radio here, but that's been the same strategy ever since. The difference is that back in 2002, it was only slideware. Today, it's backed up by IP. We have several software products that we're using internally and with our customers that are really the heart of the operation. And then we have 600-700 what I would call business consultants that are really working on strategy with customers. And we don't see any of our competitors do anything comparable to that. So that's organically very focused on the strategy, and we've been able to drive it with a very strict hand. Every new country, first 15 people, the titles of what they're going to do, which customers, you know, for all practical purposes, they've gotten a recipe on how to bake a very complex cake. And we told them, if you don't bake it exactly as we said, it's going to be a burned, very low cake. And then on Link on the other side, Link is a company where the customer traction is much slower. So we can sign a customer for maybe 10,000 kroner per month, and it's going to take 2 years until it reaches 50,000, which means that whenever you start a new country, you can't really do it organically because it would take 6, 7, 8 years to reach a position as number 1, 2, 3. So we had to rely on acquisitions, and that's just a very different animal. So I would say that the strategy is just a sound in Link, but we have to rely on hitting the right acquisition target to get a building block in each country. Crayon, we don't need the building block. We are the building. The building block is the strategy.
What do you, as an investor, when you look at new companies, do you prefer the organic route? Or is it fair to say that the organic often takes a little bit longer time before you hit an inflection point?
Yes, it does. I mean, we're talking about, we call it the vintage curve, and we measure the vintage curve on how much of the gross profit you are able to turn into EBITDA. And of course, a company that is started organically in Crayon takes 3, 4 years to really hit the zero and then start to make money. In Link, that same would have taken 8 years.
Oh, really?
So organically is faster in what Microsoft, what Crayon is doing. And therefore, with, you know, the revenue, the growth opportunity is just incredible. This year, analysts are telling us that we'll have a revenue of 25 billion. And I don't have any issue seeing 50 billion over the next 3, 4 years.
That's fantastic. Our analyst is expecting, like you say, 25 billion this year and up to 35 billion then in 2 years' time. That's as far as his published estimates goes. So 50 billion would be a doubling. That's,
I think probably more than 2 years, but 3, 4 years, yeah. I think we should be able to do it. Because we see that whenever we start a new country, it's first and foremost private companies we go towards. And then when we get a name, we get a position, we can start to work with the public sector. And what we see now, which is probably going to drive things in a very dramatic fashion, is that we're really starting to win a lot of public bids around the world that are very sizable. We did publish a deal in the Philippines with the $400 million over the next few years. We did publish
a deal. It was Microsoft related, wasn't it?
That was Microsoft related. We did win a large Amazon deal in Malaysia. We did win a $1.2 billion deal in the US for Microsoft. So those kind of deals are very sizable, long-term, and we have the ability to make money because of our customer approach.
You mentioned, I noticed with great interest, the public sector.
Yeah.
And then I looked a little bit at the numbers, and to my surprise, I must admit, because I thought your biggest position was either Crayon or Link, but in terms of your public filed positions on the Oslo Stock Exchange, your biggest holding is in a less known company called Sikri, where you have 43% of the shares, so that's 1.1 billion NOK worth. And Sikri, I think, is a lot less known so far than Crayon and Link.
Yeah.
Are you the only guy that made any money from the Tieto Elvi merger? Or the only investor?
I can't tell, but what I know is that the moment I understood that they had to divest that company, I was on fire. So
which year is this?
This is late 2019.
And so Tieto and Evry both had a business that did a little bit the same. And so the competition authority said you have to sell one. Is that?
Yeah, they did. So they were told by the competition authorities, and I was notified on a Sunday evening. Somebody called me and said, you know, they have to get rid of that part. So we got a meeting with the Tieto the next day, Monday morning. And we said we're ready to do due deal, everything, and sign a contract on Friday. So that was a 5-day process, and we made the offer that same Monday. They called us on Thursday and said, "No, this is going too fast. We can't do it. There are other suitors that want to buy this company." And I said, "Okay, we're going to be at the lawyer's office tomorrow at noon, and I think you need to consider the cost of postponing the merger between Tieto and Evry for maybe 3 more months. And you have to add that to our offer before you really, think about, waiting weeks or months to do it. So we went to the lawyer's office and they were there. So
was it public how much you bought the company for, or is that a secret?
It's a secret, or it's not disclosed. But if you look at the balance sheet, you can see more or less what it is. And it's been a hell of a ride over the last year and a half.
Safe to assume a lot less than current 2.4 billion NOK market cap.
That's for sure.
But how big can this company become?
It's very interesting because this company, I mean, what's really great about it, it's that the Nordics are four democracies that are on a digitization spree. They want to digitize everything because we don't have enough people to do all the jobs in the future. And especially the public sector is, over the next 10 years, it's probably going to grow 25 to 30% on a yearly basis.
So it's procurement, it's everything.
It's kindergartens, it's school, it's health.
It's documentation of what the public is buying.
Well,
tendering for.
Yeah, that's one thing. But we do every building permits, every application to do anything within the city or the county or what have you. I would say every process within municipality, a fylke, a county, or even in the public, the ministries or etater, all the organizations that are public, we have solutions for, and that's going to grow. We know that for sure. And a very good thing is that these are local rules for Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland that are not global. So we won't get competition from IBM or Microsoft or SAP. It's going to be a Nordic championship between Sikri and a few other players. And I think Sikri is in very good shape to not cross the finish line yet, because that's going to be many years from now. But we're definitely in a very strong position.
But you don't see this company going to America or rest of Europe?
We do have solutions that will fit very well in other parts of the world, but that will, as we see today, probably be as a partner business. But the home market will be the Nordics for the next few years. And we've just only started. I mean, the opportunities are very, very great. And it's long-term, it's ARR, it's all those elements that investors are looking for. But I mean, we're still a small company between 750 and 800 million. But it's very profitable. Very strong from a solution and competence perspective. So yeah, this is going to be hopefully a very, very nice ride going forward.
Exciting. Moving swiftly then to TechStep, which was a company where Arctic was a advisor when you raised some money at Forspot 5 the other week or the other last month. That's not been such a great stock market performer. It's fair to say you raised some money at 570 in 2017, 315 in 18, and now at 450 in 21. This is the old Nordialog, if I understand it correctly. What's been the relative?
This is the what has happened in the mobile space is that from 2010 to 27 when the iPhone came, and to 2017, 2018. There was a huge growth in mobile phones, and Apple, Samsung, other companies could come up and say, okay, this is a new great feature, and everybody switched phones. So the growth was incredible, and we knew that couldn't continue, because as in every new product category, it matures and then it tapers off. But it's in the saturation period that you see the winners going forward. And the winners in this mobile space is not the hardware sellers. It's going to be the services and software players. So TechStep has used the last 2 years for a transformation period, going from being the number one player on hardware in the Norwegian market to become a very strong service and software vendor. So we are now presenting what we called managed mobility services, which is a combination of services that we have and software that we have, our own IP, the only player in the Nordics with our own IP for the whole software stack. Which means that we can offer and compete on a very competitive platform. And we see that transformation is it's still going on, but we entered 2020 with zero cases of managed mobility services cases, and we entered 2021 with more than 70 cases that we were working on. So we see that the market is coming towards us. Garten Group is very clear. This is going to be one of the winning segments of the IT industry over the next 3 to 5 years. So I, you know, I'm very confident that we will come out with TechStep as at least the Nordic leader. No, we bought a company in Poland as well, so we might
go beyond Europe.
Might go beyond the Nordics, but we will definitely come out as the leader of mobility managed services. And it's a highly needed service for the companies because it, you know, it's environmental reasons that you need to take care of the phones. The cost is very high. I mean, a phone costs more than a PC or a tablet. And of course, the usage. And you have security issues. You have usage issues when people quit and they bring their phone. And everything within the company is they can reach through the phone. So you really need to have this in place. And this is a market that's going to grow quite fast over the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Swiftly moving on to Civis. Civis, sorry, yeah. Pronouncing that wrong. It's not a very big company yet. It's got market cap of 500 million. You own shares 15%, so that's about 80 million. But you have said that this could be like the next Crayon, which sounds exciting.
Yeah, the key here is that the audiovisual industry has hundreds of players. There are players, and we have some really good players here in Norway with cameras. We have players with video conferencing.
Pexip is listed.
As an example. And we have other players delivering screens, cameras, software, etc. The main difference when I looked at this, and I didn't invest in either Pexip or because for me that's a bit of a lottery, or at least the price versus the revenue. But what I saw in Civis, which I think is really interesting, and I've been utilizing audiovisual equipment for the last 35 years. It's the first time I came into a meeting room, saw a very small screen, never seen it before, and within 3 minutes, everything worked. So it was like a Tesla moment or a Mac moment. Okay. I saw, and then I started to ask, what have you done here? And what they've done is that they developed a platform that can take with APIs, can take all kinds of equipment and make the usage of it extremely good. And that's what happened with Microsoft. I mean, Civis got a big contract with Microsoft a few months ago. And the funny thing is that Microsoft had actually chosen someone else, but they were told, look at what Civis has here. And they got a pilot. They took the pilot for 2 months and said, yes, this is it. This is the solution. So I would say they have an operating systems for audiovisual communication with video, sound, everything. And so they can coexist with Pexip, Huddle, whoever, you know, what player you want. So for us, the key is to get the platform in as many hands as possible around the world with as many partners as possible around the world. And if we can continue to take that kind of Tesla or Mac position within this very chaotic business area, then I think we have a great future. But I mean, execution is still, we're still very early days. It's a long road ahead of us, and we definitely need to have a global partners, a global reach with our platforms. But the customers are giving us the feedback we need to believe in what we're doing.
You're the second biggest shareholder in this little company. The biggest shareholder is the Norwegian government.
Yeah,
and are you happy with that, the ownership structure?
So far, they've been very happy that we came in.
It's of course InvestiNor, which is I would say a fairly active part of the.
They are, and they have a different decision making process than what we have. So that might create issue, but you know they have said very clear, we want you to take lead in the board. We want you to use your international scalability experience, and so far that has worked extremely well. Is it going to work extremely well in the future? Who knows? But, you know, in every company, there will be issues with shareholders or management or whatever, and you just have to take it on when it appears.
That's a perfect segue over to the last company that I'm going to ask you about, because that is Infront. There was some issues because you were a shareholder and there were founders that decided to sell out to a private equity bidder. And you were, I think, quite vocal, verbal, amusing. You said you said to local papers in Norwegian, this bid is so bad that the board should immediately resign. That you maybe said other things as well. But then there was an increased bid, the initial bid at 34.4 was bumped to 40, so that was 16% higher. So certainly your activism worked, but what happened in the end, Jens?
Yeah, so the activism wasn't my intention at all, but I saw a company and I started to buy at around 15 kroner. I saw a company with more than 1 billion NOK in ARR. I saw a company that was the third largest in its industry in Europe. I saw a Norwegian company with incredible opportunities. But
the best part is, of course, that the incumbent is very sleepy. Bloomberg has been making too much money for too many years, I think.
And the technology they have compared to what Infront had, I think the streets were paved with opportunities when it comes to Infront. My view was that the price was wrong from the start. It should have been valued at least a double or maybe even more.
And you were also clear. You said that you would support a new issue of new shares. You said, okay, this is worth a lot more, but we maybe need to put in some money.
Yeah, because they had a debt issue, and that's one of the reasons why they really couldn't do the proactive moves that could take this company into the limelight. And they didn't like talking to investors or media or what have you. And if you're on the stock exchange, you need to play the media, you need to play the investors, you need to play the organization to really reach your goals. And if you're only willing
to... Especially, I would say, if all your clients are in the stock market, it's
a
bit funny.
So that was... I mean, the management are really strong in what they're doing. I mean, they are industrialists. They have very long experience, probably not many people that are better. But as you know, I don't think they know how to spell IR.
But you've been through this with Link Mobility as well. Sometimes taking a company private can be very lucrative, and then
But this is a Norwegian. This was a Norwegian company that I think could have done well on the stock exchange as well. And I don't think the shareholders really wanted to sell, but. When the board and the management says this is what we're going to do, so we protested and said that we think that we can do as well for all the shareholders on the stock exchange over the next few years. But life is too short to do all the fights, and we did have some very good discussions with Inflection after the bid was out, and they could of course not promise anything or say really anything that could, tell us about the future. But we've discussed it over the last few months. And there are so many opportunities in the market. And we decided we didn't want to sit in the back row in the seat of a bus, which is driven by Inflection.
So you were invited into the private equity vehicle?
No. We were told that they liked what we said and that we could discuss this later on. But of course, they preferred that we sold the shares. And in the end, we said, okay, so we made a lot of money on the transaction. I'd prefer to sit on, but there is so many other opportunities that we don't want to be a backseat passenger when we can do things, other things. Because that's the crazy thing about Norway these days. The opportunities that arises every day is just Incredible.
A lot of new companies on the stock exchange, and certainly we have a lot of inflow of capital from across the world. We have a lot of very good brokerage houses that like Arctic.
That must be it.
No, but maybe there is something in the blood and in the inheritance of risk-taking from Norway that obviously we have had shipping and oil, and we've had a lot of risk historically. So yeah. Now maybe it's time to also embrace the technology shift.
Yeah. The only thing that is a major problem in Norway is that the politicians don't understand what's going to save Norway after the oil. What we see, which I think is terrible, is that every new fantastic idea that is being created is being sold to some other country. And I typically use Visma as an example. Visma is one of the great software companies in Europe, or actually in the world. And it was started in Norway. It was... It was built by Mr. Øystein Moan, and he made a lot of money, and there were some Norwegians making a lot of money. But
yeah, that's
maybe
Kahoot money came from Visma, a lot of it.
Maybe 2-3 billion NOK was made by Norwegians. And now the company is worth 150 billion. And I would say that the reason why Visma could never stay Norwegian is the Norwegian taxing rules. If they hadn't been there, if we hadn't had to pay the wealth tax, I think there would be more family offices, more industrialists also within the IT industry that would say, you know what, this is a great company, it should stay Norwegian. Now it's become a English-American company. It's still on the, it's still here in Norway. But the fact is that if you look at what they're buying these days, 80% of everything they're buying is outside Norway. So the shift has moved.
No, they have also threatened to IPO in Amsterdam, I think, because they have a big business in Holland. And so it's I fully agree with you.
Yeah. So this is, I would say this is worse than giving away Henrik Ibsen.
Oh, very good quote. We are coming towards the end. It's been a fantastic conversation. We could go on, but I'm just going to have to ask you, because you mentioned your the best part about COVID was that you saw more time Friday evenings with your wife. But do you have two wives, Jens?
Yeah. So I know where you're going.
In a legal way.
I worked very closely with Rune Syversen for many years. And when we had the traditional phone and somebody rang, my daughter, she took the phone and then she said, "It's your other wife calling." And Rune called me at least twice a day. So that happened, that quote I've heard many times.
Well, what's the secret between your success? Because I have to say it's quite uncommon in Norway. I mean, you know, Jon Fredrik and Olav Trøim, they were best friends for 15 years, but then it was a messy divorce. And a lot of people are not necessarily working in twos, I think. So what's the secret to your success? Is it something from his ice hockey background that you punch each other up when you disagree? Or
yeah, so one major reason is that we're extremely different. We have our strengths, and I think we both acknowledge that this is my strength and this is his. As an example, he has a way with people that I'm hostile towards people compared to him. he has a way of talking to people that when Rune has to fire someone, the guy smiling coming out is the one being fired.
So that's a skill.
That's a skill. As an example, and I think maybe I have... I'm a bit more analytical than he is, but he's a guy that can come into a meeting and really loosen things up. So it works quite well. And then, of course, we argue all the time, but then it never grows on us.
How many years have you been working together?
20.
20 years.
It never grows on us. The fights are immediate. So it really isn't... it really isn't anything long term, and we're trashing each other in all kinds of meetings all the time. So I always start out saying my name and what I do and how I make my money. I don't really have a salary, but Nav is paying me to take care of Rune. That's the opening statement.
That's fantastic. Mr. Jens Rugseth, thank you so much for spreading your positive energy to both the Stock Exchange but also the Arctic Podcast. It was a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
This podcast has been prepared by Arctic for information purposes only. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered professional advice. The information provided in this podcast is not intended to constitute investment advice, nor is the information intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any financial instrument. Relevant and specific professional advice should always be obtained before making any investment or credit decision. It is important to note that past performance is not indicative of future results. This podcast does not fulfill the criteria for preparing investment research and must be seen as marketing material. All information submitted during this podcast is obtained from public sources that Arctic believes to be reliable, but which Arctic has not independently verified. Arctic makes no guarantee, representation, or warranty as to its accuracy or completeness. No liability whatsoever is accepted for any direct or indirect, including consequential, loss or expense arising from the use of information from this podcast.